Welcome to Church Unfiltered with Dr. Anthony Copps, a leadership podcast brought to you by Breakthrough Ministry Consulting.
Welcome to another episode of Church Unfiltered. We are powered by Breakthrough Ministry Consulting. We are here to help pastors and church leaders get the answers to questions that they are really asking. And so I am excited to have with us one today, someone who definitely can answer multiple questions, and I have a bunch of questions for him, but I'm excited to have with us on today someone since I launched this podcast that I've wanted to have on Church Unfiltered, and that is William Vanderblumen. He is the CEO and the founder of the Vanderblumen Search Group. It is a group that helps to connect people to churches and ministry, and I'll give him an opportunity to explain that. But William has been able to combine over 15 years of ministry experience as a senior pastor with the best practices of executive search to provide churches with a unique offering, a deep understanding of local church work with the very best knowledge and practices of professional executive search. I am excited to have with us William Vanderblumen. How are you doing today, William?
Doing great, Anthony. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, thank you again for joining us. And I am looking forward to getting to these questions that we have for you, because there are so many of our listeners, the pastors, church leaders, church staff, that might have questions in reference to staffing, and pastors who may even have questions in reference to what you have written about and what you have done extensive research about as far as succession. So I want to dive into some of the questions that we have for you. But first of all, I just want to ask you how you're doing. You're there in Houston. Oh, how are you doing during this pandemic time? How are you and your family? How are you doing?
You're kind to ask, man. That's a question I'm learning is more important than maybe any other year. You know, we work with thousands of churches and pastors. We help churches find their key staff. So most of the time, that's a church looking for a pastor. Maybe it's Resurrections looking for an IT guy. Maybe it's a youth pastor. But in doing that, we talked to a whole lot of pastors. And I'll tell you, man, I've just learned to cut out more time for fewer calls over the last, particularly the last 3 months. It felt like when this pandemic started, there was shock and awe. And then it was almost like, and in a weird sort of way, it was almost like everybody sort of dug in and said, well, let's do it, you know, give it a good run. And there was a little bit of energy about all the creativity that was needed. Right. And that was fine in March and April and May, but now it's November.
Right.
And people are tired. And, you know, we're doing great right now, knock on wood. Nobody in my family's gotten the virus yet. Even my extended family. And that's just grace. That's not, sure. You know, I think everybody's trying to wash their hands and
right,
wear masks.
Absolutely.
We've just
absolutely
been very fortunate. And, you know, our family devotions have actually gotten a little better because we're together more, and I'm taking more intentional role in that. So there's a lot of things that I celebrate. I tend to be almost hopelessly optimistic about things. And, you know, we were going around the dinner table the other night saying, well, you know, it's kind of a tough year. And one of our kids said, well, at least we aren't living in a concentration camp in World War II. And then another kid said, or during the bubonic plague that killed one third of Europe. And then another one said, or anywhere in China during any time that the cons were ruling. And so you know, it's like, hey, you know, it's a tough year, but Jesus got out of the grave and it's going to be all right.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Between now and then, we've got some suffering and some hard days, but our house is doing well. Thank you for asking me. And I want to speak a word of encouragement to anybody that's listening today that's down, because I know you didn't sign up for this if you're leading a church. And we're actually recording this on Election Day, and up until today, and maybe even for a while after. I think pastors, you know, you've had to lead through a pandemic, and I hope you saved your class notes from seminary about leading through a pandemic, right? and you'd had to lead through, giant civil unrest that's happened because of some horrible racial activity that's gone on. And right. and that's just a whole nother thing to lead through. And then at the same time, you've got this election that, right. frankly, it's polarized. The two dogs in my house are mad at each other about who they're going to vote for. So, that trifecta, you know, that old movie with George Clooney, The Perfect Storm.
Yes.
It's like all three of those things have been battering pastors, and probably 7 or 8 out of 10 that I've talked to, they're about ready to quit. And I just want to tell you, Jesus got up and we know the end of the story, and, right. and it will get better. And I will pray for you tonight, you who are listening today. And I thank you for serving on the front lines. We who are consulting kind of get to sit in the back and watch you do the hard work. I'm cheering for you. I'm pulling for you, and just want to encourage you.
That is a blessing. Thank you for encouraging these pastors, encouraging all of us. You definitely hear the preacher. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about yourself, William. You hear? We heard the preacher. We heard.
Well, I'll try and keep it short. I tell people I'm a recovering preacher, so I babble on and on. But I served in the ministry for about 15 years, mostly as a senior pastor in the Presbyterian Church. And the last church I served was here in Houston, First Presbyterian Houston, which is actually where Sam Houston went to church. It's kind of within the Houston context, old. Went through a divorce, which I would not recommend. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything the tabloids would have picked up. It was just kind of a tragic fault on all sides sort of deal. But I found myself single dad with 4 kids and in no shape to preach or minister to anybody. So I stepped away from ministry and went into the business world. A friend of mine was in oil and gas, and he said, why don't you come work with us? It was a big company. And I didn't know what I was doing. He said, no, we can teach you the dead dinosaur part. You know people. So I went on, and while I was there, the CEO had been there 9 and a half years, which for a Fortune 200 company is a lifetime. I mean, that's forever. And he decided it was time to talk about his succession and to find the next CEO. And so they did this thing. I was working in HR at the time as a manager. And so I kind of was like the water boy for the team on succession. I didn't have a critical role, but I got to be around. And, you know, watching this thing go down, they hired this thing I'd never heard of called a search consultant. I don't know what that was. We didn't have those at Princeton Seminary or in Presbyterian Church. And this guy came in and he helped them get to know what they were looking for. And like 90 days later, they had their next CEO, and he stayed, you know, I wouldn't know it then, but he stayed 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And then they sold the company at a really good price right before all this pandemic hit. So, I mean, like, arguably it was a good transition, right?
Absolutely.
So I sat there, Anthony, and I remembered going to First Presbyterian Church, which is such a fine church. Mm-hmm. And it took them almost 3 years to find me, which is kind of ridiculous to be it was 3 years without a senior pastor. I stayed 6 years, and it took them about 2 and a half years to find the next senior pastor.
Wow.
So you got a church where 11 to 12 years, half the time they're looking for a pastor, half the time they have one. Then you got an oil and gas company, which arguably is the closest thing to the Death Star or the evil empire or whatever, you know, like oil and gas. And they go 90 days, seamless transition. And I'm like, that's crazy. Right. And I looked at that search consultant thing they used, and I thought, now, why in the world does the business world have a better solution than the bride of Jesus?
Wow.
And I came home, Adrian and I had just gotten married. We blended our families. We have 6 kids. We're new house, you know, a lot of mouths to feed. And I said, baby, I think I'm supposed to quit my job and start something new for churches.
How did that go?
She looked at me and she said, that's because churches love new ideas, right?
Oh, my goodness.
But off we went, and it was the fall of 2008, which was just a really smart time to quit your job. But off we went, and we started, and now, you know, fast forward a little over 12 years, and we've gotten to do about 2,000 searches, helping churches all over the world. Folks in your neck of the woods, like Max Licato, Willow Creek, and then the church of 70 people in Wyoming that, you know, they had 100 on Easter, and they thought it was just the best thing ever with their new pastor. So it's so cool to see how big God's kingdom is, how much he really doesn't need us. He's right. going to get this done no matter what. And to get to serve in a small way, helping churches find that key staff.
So that is a remarkable story. And I'm so glad that you did follow the lead of the Spirit in that, and that your wife agreed to. Now tell us a little bit more about a search firm for churches. So elaborate a little bit more on right. that, because I know that that's unfamiliar to many people. As you said, even when you heard search consulting in the oil and gas world, it wasn't familiar. What is that? What does that mean right. for a church?
Well, I think it's a fairly new idea, because up until the last 30, 40 years, denominations worked pretty well. And, you know, if you were a Baptist or a Methodist or a Presbyterian or wherever you were, your district office helped you right. as a church when right. it was time to find a new senior minister. But a lot's changed. Most people that attend church in the United States attend a non-denominational church. So there's not really a network.
Right.
Most denominations have been in a pretty steady decline for the last 30, 40 years, and they've gotten loved to death, but they've gotten a little less and less functional.
Right.
And a lot of what we do, Anthony, like I've got this buddy I work out with who his hobby is mountain climbing. He's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, he goes up the big ones where they sleep in a hammock on the side of the rock and all that.
Oh,
and he told me about, do you know this word Sherpa?
No, I don't.
It's the little guy that's native to whatever, the Himalayas or wherever you're climbing. Huh. And they go up and down the mountain their whole life. And then, you know, the crazy white guy comes in, wants to climb Mount Everest or whatever. Well, the Sherpa says, okay, I'll show you the way up. I've been up the mountain before. And I'll keep you from falling down. I know where the holes are. I'll watch your back. And that's kind of what we do. You know, a church needs a pastor, or a pastor needs a new youth director, kids director, whatever. Hey, look, man, just like nobody taught you about the pandemic in seminary, nobody teaches you how to go find staff. But we've done it a couple thousand times now for all different kinds of churches. And we know the path up the mountain, and it's your mountain to summit. It's all cool. Y'all be the hero. We're just here to serve and, you know, show you the way, maybe expand your network some. In this world where everybody's on Facebook and LinkedIn, and you think it'd be easy, but people... Man, I look so much better online than I do in person. Like, so it's a really special ground to get to stand on, because hiring, you know, that's serious stuff. You hire the wrong person and you got a mess.
Yes, sir.
And I have a trust us to say, we want you to help us down this path. It's, yes. You know, that's serious Holy Spirit territory. Right. And we're humbled and honored to get to walk with folks down that path.
So you help. So your search firm helps people, helps churches to find staff. But then
right.
also, if there are people who are interested in a position or they're looking for work, you also help people to find churches that are.
Well, yeah, that's a great question, because there are these sort of job placement services where I need a job, help me, please. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not really what we do. The churches are the ones that hire us. Now, having said that, pastors call us all the time because they see we represent, you know, whatever, Saddleback or Willow right. Creek or, you know, Oak Cliff or,
right.
or you name the church, or Resurrection in San Antonio. Now, that'd be a big one if we represent that. That'd be awesome. But, you
see
know, they see
do.
Who we represent. And they're like, look, I'm thinking maybe it's time for a move. And I think my time might be done here. Can you help me? Can you mm-hmm. guide me? And we don't charge any money for that. First thing we tell them when they call us and say that is, call me back when it's not Monday.
We know how Mondays are. We know.
Oh my gosh, man.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. The number of calls I get like that on Monday is more than all six other days combined.
Oh my goodness.
It's ridiculous. And it's just like, dude, you're depressed. You know, call me back tomorrow and then we can talk. So yeah, we'll guide people and we'll help them. And if there's anybody out there, you know, that needs a little help figuring out the path, we can do that. There's no charge for that. It's our client is the church. So okay. Yeah,
that's good. That's really good. So here I am as the executive pastor at Resurrection, and have been, I was the executive pastor there in Houston as well for a few years, at a church there. Hiring people. And one of the things that we do, we have a tendency of trying to do it on our own. What have you seen is some of the main obstacles or some of the main obstacles churches bump into with trying to do it on their own? And what would you suggest to a church trying to hire someone?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. I think that most people feel like they should be able to do it on their own. And most people feel like nobody knows the church as well as I do, which is true.
Right.
And you feel this responsibility, you know, God's placed his hand on you and put you over this church. You should be able to do this on your own. And that's all real natural. But fact is, unless you have done thousands and thousands of interviews, you can get fooled real fast.
Yes.
And a lot of times people will wait too long to get a hire done. And then they're forced in a corner and it's like, you know, my cousin recommended a friend that he knows that's got a friend. And then all of a sudden you feel like you know him. And, you know, and you know, there is the most expensive hire you will ever make at a church is hiring the wrong person.
Oh my goodness.
Hiring someone is deeply painful and it takes time and energy. And you get, I don't care how bad a job they did, they've got five families that love them. So, you know, you get little pockets of insurrection you got to deal with. It's just not, it's not cool. So I think the cleanest image of what we do, Anthony, is it's almost like an organ transplant. Like, you know, if it's a staff person, maybe you need a new kidney. And, you know, part of the trick is finding organ donors. You know, you want to find an outsider to come inside your body and run a major system. Well, you got to find donors. But if you talk to transplant doctors and you ask them what's the real difference between a so-so transplant doctor and a really good one, they'll tell you it's the tissue match. It's the ability to see who fits.
That's good.
And you can put a healthy kidney into a healthy body.
Right.
But if the tissue doesn't match, you got a problem.
Yes.
So I was running through this image years ago with a committee and I was sort of falling all over myself. I was new at this, didn't know what I was doing and trying to tell them why they needed us instead of doing it on their own. And I wasn't making much sense. And an old guy on the search committee raised his hand. I said, yes, sir. He said, you know, I've been a surgeon here. This was not in Texas, different state. Yeah, I've been a surgeon here for 455 years or whatever the number was, right? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, did you know in this state, it's illegal for me to operate on my own family? I said, why is that?
Oh my goodness.
He said, even if I've been operating for decades, if it's my own family, I don't have any objectivity. And so they won't let me do it.
Wow.
He said, what'd you think about that? And I said, would you like to quit being a surgeon and come work with me? Because you just explained it better than I could. So I think there's something to that. I think there's a loss of objectivity and it's just helpful to have that third set of eyes. You know, somebody that's been up the mountain, knows the path and can say, hey man, I've done this before. I know you feel lonely. I know you feel like you got to do it on your own, but let us serve you and help you figure it out.
That is powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think every pastor is listening, that probably resonated with them. And it makes sense because all the objectivity just kind of goes out the window, especially when we reward people with positions.
Yes.
And I see that a lot with pastors in different churches. We reward people. They've been faithful, so I'm going to give them this position. And they may not be the best person, the best fit for that role, and it ends up costing. And so what you just shared, that was really, really good. What do you hear, William? What do you hear from pastors and leaders? What do you hear directly from them as the greatest challenge that they face in hiring people or even just staffing in general? What do you hear from pastors?
Well, there's staffing in general, and then there's right now. And it's a different day right now.
Yes.
Staffing in general. I think staffing is, you know, hiring someone is a venture into the unknown. And what I mean by that is anytime you add a team member to a team, you're going to change the dynamics and it's not going to be the same anymore.
Right.
And if you think about that, that's pretty scary. And if you think about like basic human fear, I don't know a more fundamental or primal fear than we have than the unknown. I mean, what do your little kids say when it's time to go to bed? Can you leave the light on?
You leave the light on, right?
Right. What are we afraid of when we die? The unknown. I mean, even Christians are like, I know I'm going to be with Jesus, but I've never done this before. And, you know, people get afraid. And I think hiring, it's one of those things that everybody thinks, oh, I ought to be able to do that because I'm a good leader. I should build a great team. Right. But it's a venture into the unknown. Yeah. So a couple things happen when you venture into the unknown. You'll do anything you can to find something you do know. So what does that mean? Well, that means, you know, I heard about my friend who knows a guy, and now you feel like it's a known and it's no longer unknown.
That's good.
And and you might have a son of the house, which is great. I mean, maybe there's somebody that needs that bump up and they've been faithful and you want to, you know, reward them with new. That's awesome. I'm all for hiring from within. But I got to tell you, Anthony, I'm from deep in the woods of North Carolina. Okay. Like long time ago, there was a movie film called Deliverance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was filmed near where I grew up.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Let me just tell you something you can learn from that movie. Constant inbreeding does not end well. So you hire from within all the time,
yes,
and you lose the chance to have an outside perspective. So it's not an all the time solution. It's a lot of the time, but not all. So as you're going into the unknown, you're going to have an unhealthy bias toward the people that are already in your house or people you might've heard of. And maybe they're right. Maybe they're not. But that, man, how do I know which way? I think I spend more time counseling pastors than finding a name for them. And that's a real honor to get let into a pastor's confidence at that level.
Right. Right. I imagine so. So where do you think staffing priorities are now? I mean, you just mentioned about the pandemic or during this time. Where do you think staffing priorities are now with most
teams? Well, there are a couple things that sound like they're competing, but one is it's really hard to get people to move right now. Okay. If you're recruiting and you're trying to get somebody to move across the country to a town they don't know, I mean, basically you're asking people to choose to inject a bunch of uncertainty into their life right now.
Right.
And I think most of us have had all the uncertainty we need for the next 10, 15
years. We've had enough.
so, you know, there's that piece where it can be really hard. And frankly, it's one of the things God's really done in our firm in the last 9 months is raised up the value of having us as sort of this safe place for pastors to talk to.
Okay.
Where I don't really want anybody to know I'm looking, but I'll talk to you because we sort of live in a vault and, you know, so there's that side of it. It's hard to get people to move. The other side, you're probably, if you're leading a church right now, going to lose more staff than you think you will over the next 12 to 18 months. There is a churn coming. Some of it's natural. I don't know. Okay. You ever have a friend take a sabbatical, like they get a 2-3 month break?
Right.
And invariably you come back from the sabbatical and you're like, you know, maybe it's time for a change.
Right.
I mean, I hear it all the time. In fact, a lot of churches say, if you're going to go on sabbatical, you got to stay for a year afterward. Because it just happens. So what is that? Well, I think a lot of times I get caught in a pattern or a rut. And if there's something that comes along that breaks that pattern for me, it makes me drop back and go, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing?
Right.
The pandemic has been a giant break from the pattern.
Yes.
So a lot of women and men in ministry who've been doing the same thing forever and ever are looking up saying, life is shorter than I thought it was. I mean, we're seeing people die. Am I where I'm supposed to be? So that part of churn is coming. There's another part of churn coming where, and I've seen it over and over and over already, where you're going to lose staff because they want to go near their family or their spouse's family and be close to home.
That makes
the value of extended family that I haven't seen in a whole year. I mean, I hear it left and right. So I think if you're a pastor and you're listening today, you should go ahead and get yourself emotionally ready that from now, while it's still uncertain, to even on the other side of the virus, you're going to see a pretty massive churn. And then compounding all of that, you got a lot of people who really are depressed and are about ready to hang it up.
Right.
So I just foresee a time where there are going to be more people, you know, when you get that call, you're an exec pastor and you say, hey, Anthony, have you got 5 minutes toward the end of the day where we can talk? It won't take long. And you're like, yes. Oh man.
You already know. Yes.
They're leaving, and you're going to have more of those conversations, and it's probably okay. I mean, I forget sometimes. It's not, I got so many friends that do multi-site, and it's all of them have some version of one church, many locations, right? It's actually like this: one kingdom, many locations.
Right.
So a lot of people are about to get redeployed, and that's okay. And I would just offer a word of encouragement to pastors that if a staff person leaves you, they're not leaving you. They're not leaving you.
Right.
They're just getting redeployed by Jesus in his church.
Right.
And that's okay. So, you know, and then when it's time to fill that hole, give me a call and we'll figure it out. We've been up the mountain.
That's a great word of encouragement. And I definitely, we've talked about it here on the show before, and in reference to post-pandemic things coming out of this season, that probably there will be people who will move on. So you're echoing that and summarize that in such an eloquent way. What do you tell pastors who they themselves might be those individuals who are looking to move on?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in a perfect world, first of all, let me speak to senior pastors who have subordinate staff that might move on. I've been a senior pastor. I know what it's like to, you get stabbed in the back, you get Absalom at the gates, I've had it all. And then, when you pastor in the deep South, which I did, sometimes you didn't even know the daggers in your back for like a month. You're like, what is that thing back there? And it's, oh, look at that. You know, like it's all of that can lead to a really insecure, a naturally insecure feeling about people leaving. But let me just tell you how cool it is when I see a pastor who says, I'm going to be a sending church. And when it's time for someone to go, then we're going to send them. Now, you've got some power in that. When a person says, I need to leave and I want to leave in a month, and you got 2 months of work they need to do, you can look at them. Here's a great question, pastor, to ask your staff. Do you want to leave us? Or do you want to be sent?
Wow.
Give me the extra 30 days. Give me the extra finish this punch list. Let me send you and bless you. And let's make this a sending moment. So that's just a quick word to pastors who I know have gotten beaten up undeservedly. And it sometimes leads to some insecurity about people leaving. Now, if you're thinking about leaving, call me back when it's not Monday. I'm not kidding, right?
Yes.
And I'd ask yourself, you could go to our site, just go to vanderblumen.com. You can type it however you want in Google and it will come to us. It's the only reason we named the company after me is because my last name's such a mess that you can misspell it. You'll end up there. There are just in the search box, say, when is it time to quit my job? And you'll find there are probably 3,000 free resources on that website, by the way, for hiring, running staff meetings, firing volunteers, anything team oriented. And there's a lot on there about what we're learning about discerning when God's calling you versus when you're getting tired. And there's a difference.
Wow.
So most people quit right before they should.
Yes.
But there is a right time. And, you know, some of you out there are like, I can't leave my current place because it wouldn't be faithful. That's not true. What did Jesus get in trouble with his disciples over and over and over? Why were they mad at him? Why won't you stay in one place? You know, he went from town to town and village to village, preaching, teaching, and healing. And they're like, can you not sit still and stay? No. Our faith is the only faith on the planet that's portable and moves.
Yeah,
and there's a whole sermon series in that, but it moves and it might be time for you to move. The question is, and I'd leave it with this. I'm yet to see a healthy move where God doesn't call you to completion of one mission and a call toward another mission.
Yes.
So far too often, Anthony, in the secular world, people will go join a company because of its cause, but they leave a job because of their manager. That's a proven fact over and over. So I would ask yourself, if you're thinking it's time to leave, is this because of your manager? Now, if they're harassing you, if they're abusive, if there's no recourse, if everyone's leaving because okay, I understand that. You know, the church is run by, shocker, a bunch of sinners.
Right.
Sure, I'm glad you and I aren't one of those, right?
Right.
But ask yourself, have I completed the call God has given me here? And am I being called to another thing? Is it the devil would love to distract us. Absolutely. Sometimes the distraction is by staying too long somewhere. Sometimes the distraction is, ooh, the grass might be greener over there. I might want to go. So I go to vanderblumen.com. There's a bunch of resources to read.
You have, thank you so much for sharing that. You have written on succession. Let me kind of give a backdrop before I ask this particular question. In the community that I have grown up in the church community, pastoral community that I grew up in, we are taught to stay in there basically until you cannot stay in there any longer. And so I know several pastors, even some that probably are listening to this podcast, who have been pastoring for 30, 40, 50, and even longer in some cases. Because again, it is ingrained in us, don't leave. But you have done extensive research and you've written about succession. You wrote a book about succession called Next, and I definitely recommend that to our listeners. Can you talk to pastors who don't know how to do that? That's not what they're inclined to do is succession. Can you talk to us about what is this concept of succession?
Yeah, well, for those of you who feel like you need to stay where you are, more power to you. I mean, it's a disposable world where we throw everything away, and the feeling of needing to be there, that's a noble thing. It does have a shadow side. And the shadow side is they can't live without me. Yes, they can. You know, the shadow side is I can't live without them. Yes, you can.
Right.
And the brutal fact is, Anthony, you know, every pastor is an interim pastor.
Right.
That's actually the first sentence of the book. And I stumbled across it years ago. It's a long story, but let me just put it this way. There are only three ways I know that your time as a pastor at your church will end. Maybe there are more, but you tell me. Here's way number one. You be the pastor that runs the church into the ground and you have to close it.
Mm.
Not cool, right?
Right.
Here's way number two. You happen to be the pastor who's pastoring the day Jesus returns to the earth. Super cool, right?
Right.
Very hard to get on the calendar, okay? Wow. So, right, the only other way is someone is going to come after you. There's going to be a pastor after you.
Yes.
And the corporate world, kind of like the corporate world figured out to use search firms before churches, the corporate world's figured out that maybe the biggest challenge in hiring a CEO is hiring one who will spend their time preparing the organization for the next CEO.
Mm.
And in some cases, that means preparing it for literally for your son or daughter to take over. Okay, that's fine. That's a good model. In other cases, it's not. But what are you doing to prepare the long-term legacy and health of your church? If it's built around you, it will be nothing within 10 years of your death. And I'm sorry, but I've done the research. We've done 500, 600, 700 case studies. It's just the truth. So what will you do to prepare for the next person? That's what we wrote Next for. We did all these case studies. We studied the good and the bad and the ugly. And, you know, it used to be, there's a saying in the Catholic Church, the only sick pope is a dead pope. In other words, we aren't talking about that. He's staying till he's dead. Yeah. You know, well, that's kind of how a lot of pastors in the Protestant church have felt. And part of why I wrote Next was just say, let's change that. Let's make this a real conversation that we're all grownups here. Let's really be able to talk about it. And in the 6 years since we wrote it, I've seen amazing progress in the conversation. People that would never have called me. Now we've managed a succession of the largest Church of Christ church in the country, one of the largest Methodist churches, one of the largest Baptists, the largest Anglican, the largest Episcopalian, I mean, Presbyterian. I can run down a long, long list. I even got, there's a wonderful gathering once a year of some close friends who happen to all be senior pastors of some of the largest African-American churches in the country. Mm-hmm. And I mean this totally respectfully, but this is not like ethnically diverse churches. This is black churches, right? Yeah. So they asked me to come, there's like 100 of them there, and wanted me to talk to them about succession. I'm like, guys, I looked around the room like, I am the diversity in this room. Why am I here? And they're like, no. You've managed so many of the successions. We've all been watching and been through. And that room, like when you've got Bishop Jakes taking notes from what you say, you better have something good to say.
Right, absolutely.
So when I saw the amazing men of God that were in that room that were sitting there saying, it's time for us to have this conversation. What are we going to do with this? You're like, okay, now, if I've done anything to just get us where we can talk about it, then it's a win. And I think the church is headed there. It's become a real conversation. Yeah. Doesn't mean we've got it all figured out, but we do a whole lot of succession planning, which is not a search, but it's like, I mean, I was just on the phone with a pastor. He's 55 years old. He signed us to a 10-year consultation thing where once a year we come in, how are you doing on getting ready for when you're going to retire? And whether they're younger or older, people are saying, help us. You've been up the mountain. Help us see how to see this thing through well, so that when you're in heaven and you're sitting there with the five pastors that followed you, you're looking at a thriving church down on earth.
Yes, that's good. That's good. You just mentioned the pastor that you were speaking to. What do you think is a good age for a new pastor? This is kind of a random, just an extra question. Do you think that pastors get to a point where it's like, okay, well, maybe you're a little too old to apply for that church? Or
you know what you just asked me? You just said, hey, William, do these jeans make me look fat? Like, so, how am I going to answer that? Somebody is going to be outside the age range that I say. Like, I'll answer it, but just, hey, pastor, if you're outside the age range, blame Anthony, not me.
I have to ask.
I'll tell you this, though. It's real interesting. We do a lot of research as we work with nearly all of the large churches in the country and then a whole lot of normal sized churches, too. It's about half and half between normal size and large. And in the large churches, we asked the question. We said, let's assume a pastor's been at his church a fairly long time.
Okay.
Let's assume they've had steady growth during that time. Maybe it's not a rocket ship, but it's not flat decline. Like, so when was their best season of growth? In other words, how old is a pastor when God chooses to put his hand on him? Like, is there a statistical norm? It's a pretty interesting question. So we looked at all the growth charts and all this, and long story short, you show me the growth chart of a church where the pastor's been there for a long time, I can show you his 40th birthday. Because that's when it takes off. Mm-hmm. And I talk to these guys who are 35 and they're like, my life's flying before my eyes. I don't have anything left. I'm like, dude, you're not even to the start line yet. 40 is like where things, and there's some outliers. I mean, Steve Furtick arguably has done quite a bit and he just turned 40.
Yes.
But, you know, in general, 40 is the start line. Now, I can also show you another line that's somewhere between the 60 and 65th birthday of the pastor.
Mm.
And they're outliers, but it's not usually the church does this. Frankly, it'd be easier if the church fell off. Mm. It doesn't. It just levels out and starts to slide 1 degree at a time.
Yes.
And I thought about that for a long time, and I don't know why that was. And I started studying what the Bible has to say about succession, because I was an idiot as a pastor. I was maybe the worst recruiter of volunteers in the history of Christendom. And, you know, I would stand up every August. I'd be like, oh, no, we don't have enough children's volunteers. I got to find some. So I'd stand up and say something stupid like, you know, in the Bible, there is no retirement. You might be older, but come volunteer.
Oh.
Well, A, that didn't work. B, it's not true.
Right.
God does mention retirement in the Bible. And it's only mentioned one place. And it's not a suggestion, it's a requirement.
Mm.
And it was for the priests in the Old Testament. And this is William's paraphrase. So you know, I'm not going to try and quote the verses, but it's when they're wandering in the desert, right?
Okay.
And they've got the tabernacle, they don't have a temple. And this is arguably the worst load in, load out church setting ever. Because, you know, you got to set up all the bowls and the candlesticks and all that. I mean, there's just so much. How many chapters are there about what color the things were and the tassels? So you set all that up, and then the cloud of the Lord moves, and it's time to move. And don't you know they set that church up, and then the cloud would move, and they'd be like, are you kidding me? We got to go. So you know, you set it up and then. So when they mention retirement in the Bible, basically, the reason for retirement was there comes an age where carrying the things of God becomes too much for a man.
Wow.
And just let that sit for a second, right?
Yeah, that's good.
And in the Old Testament, it started at 55 years old. David extended it when they got to Jerusalem to 60. But around about 60 years old, it was just understood that carrying the things of God becomes too much for a man. And you go back to that little growth chart I was talking about. And I don't want to go all charismatic on you. I'm a Presbyterian. We don't even like this is charismatic Presbyterian like this. That's all, you know. So, like, so you know, and it was probably a mistake. I was just getting something up, you know. So, like, but there's something to that.
Yes.
And by the way, when the priest retired, two things happened. The congregation or the people of God were required to help provide for that pastor for the rest of their life. And the pastor still had work to do. It just wasn't daily pastoral duty. It was a new form of service.
That's good.
So it's not we're putting you out to pasture and you figure out your own expenses. So that's way too long. There's the preacher coming out again. I'm sorry.
No, that was excellent. That's exactly. See, I asked the question for a reason. That's definitely helpful. So in succession, a couple more questions and then we'll wrap up. I know you are a busy man.
You're good, man.
When thinking of succession, you said that you met with some African-American leaders, various denominations. Again, culturally speaking, which that's another thing I want to talk to you about, because I followed your research and heard you talk about culture as well. And I want you to kind of talk about that a little bit. But when we have a structure in place, deacons, we have a search committee, you know, we have that kind of thing. We have that. That's the structure that many of the churches that I'm familiar with, that I work with, automatically go into a search committee mode.
Yes.
And that's in the bylaws, and that's in the way that we do things. So how do you discuss succession with churches like that, that have that ingrained in or as part of their culture, as part of their structure even?
Yeah, well, this is going to sound like an infomercial, but you call us and you get us in early. It's not expensive to start guiding the succession conversation. Like one of the things we'll do before it's ever a succession conversation is let's look at your bylaws. You know, there may be some things that were written in 1842 when there were five people in your church that aren't really helpful now that there are 5,000 people and four sites and, you know, even brand new churches. I mean, the number of times we've had to search for a church of 5,000 for a new pastor, and then we get down to the candidate and realize the bylaws say we have to have a congregational vote on a Wednesday night. And it's like,
yes,
we don't even know what that means. And we don't meet on Wednesday. So you start early and you bring in a guide to help you. And it might be another pastor, you know, that's at a larger church that could help you. I tend to think a neutral third party is more helpful. You start early and you figure out real fast, like, what is the role of the outgoing senior pastor in this? Because 95% of the success of the succession is in the hands of the outgoing pastor. And nobody, I don't know anybody who does their whole career to church and says, you know what I want to finish this off with? I want to just blow the whole thing up. I want to just ruin the church and leave poorly. But it happens over and over.
Absolutely.
Bringing somebody in, not that we would know your church better than you, that is not the point at all. It's just sometimes expertise is born out of repetitions. And if you've done this many times, then you start to see, hey, have y'all thought about this, that, or the other? If you do, the more work you do ahead of time, the easier it'll be when the actual succession comes. And the pastor may have exactly the right person in mind, and the bylaws might be set up in a way where the pastor doesn't get to say anything. Well, that's not helpful. I mean, because most highly functioning churches, the pastor knows the church better than anybody. So, you know, how do you tap into that wisdom, but also follow the bylaws? But that's the kind of thing that we come in and try and help solve.
That's good. Okay. All right. Well, I have one other question, and then I wanted to give you an opportunity to just share with the pastors that are listening anything that is on your heart, anything you want to share, or resources that your firm offers, anything that you want to share. But I want to kind of ask this question. question about culture. I hire someone, just give it a scenario. I hire someone and I quickly discover that they don't fit the culture that we have established. What do you say to a pastor, hopefully before they do that, what do you say to a pastor as far as looking into their own culture, their staff culture, their church culture, when thinking about bringing someone from the outside? Because I think that that's one of the things that I hear the most. Yeah. Is I don't want to hire someone from the outside because they won't fit into how we do things.
Totally. Well, let's assume we're talking about a church where the pastor likes the culture that he has.
That's a good point.
Okay, because sometimes there's a bad culture, and a quick way to fix that is to bring new people in.
Good point.
Right? Okay, so we're going to assume it's a good culture. You've hired somebody. They're not a cultural fit. I don't think you can coach cultural fit. I just don't think it's possible.
That's good.
And we wrote a book. It's called Culture Wins. I think you can go to culturewins.org. You can go to Vanderblumen and you'll find it. Or if you go to amazon.com and just try and type Vanderblumen, it'll show up. And there's free culture tools like theculturetool.com. It's a free test you can take, test your culture. But in writing that, we'd won a bunch of awards for best places to work and best company culture. And my team said to me, William, we need to write a book on this before we stop winning awards. So we did. And we studied 150 other churches, nonprofits, for-profits that were winning these kind of awards. What are they doing? What's the culture? One thing that came up over and over and over is they hire for cultural fit and worry about competency later.
Okay.
When I was a young pastor, I did not know that. And I wanted Michael Jordan and Magic and Larry Bird and the Olympic dream team. Right. And then I got them all there and I realized why nobody wants to coach that team. Like right. ball, you know, like there's no cultural fit, right?
Right.
So I've come to believe that nearly every time there's a cultural misfit on an early hire, you got to get rid of the early hire. And I'll put it the way my friend Sam Chan said. He was teaching a room full of pastors at a very well-known pastor's house. And he said, listen to me. If you go to the doctor for your annual physical and they check your blood work and it's great and your heart and it's great and you know, your eyes and everything's great. There's just this one thing. There's a little spot on your shoulder and it is cancer. And you know, we're going to have to deal with it. Now I can fit you in for surgery 8 or 9 months from today, or I have an opening right now and we can get to take care of it. What are you going to do?
Wow. Do it right now.
And he just stops the talk right there. And the pastor who was the host said, can we take a 10-minute break? And every one of the pastors glad to pick up their phone. And I think there was mass firing across the kingdom, but like,
that is a great
example. But it's just, it's unfortunate, but here's the thing, man, it is cruel and unusual punishment to place someone in an environment where they don't fit and then expect them to change the basics of who they are. It's not fair to them. They belong to Jesus and Jesus church, and they need to be serving somewhere else. Doesn't mean you turn them out in the cold, right. But you move them on in a way that's gracious, and we can help with that. But I would say, you know, if there's one rule of thumb in hiring that I have said for 12 years, and I believe it now more than ever, biggest mistake organizations make and the biggest lesson to learn is this: hire slowly, fire quickly. Most people don't do that, but that get a little slower, hire intentionally. When we hire for Dave Ramsey, I don't know if you know Dave,
yes.
You know, like I've said, Dave, I could place somebody inside the CIA quicker than in hiring with you. And he's like, you told me hire slowly and fire quick. So yeah.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Thank you so much, William Vanderblum. You have been a blessing to me. That several things that you have shared that have been helpful to me. Even I just came out of a staff meeting. And so I wish I would have done this before the staff meeting. My staff probably wish I would have done this before the staff meeting. But please share with us as we close out, share with us how we can connect with you, connect with your organization, And anything, sure. Any words that you want to share with the pastors that are listening?
Yeah, well, as far in terms of resources, vanderblumen.com. And, you know, we do, if you need us to help you find a staff person, that, you know, we charge for that. We charge for a few things, but we have tried, because in seminary, I never learned anything about team building and hiring and staff meetings and evaluations. Right. So as we've done this work over the last 12 and a half years, we've just kind of compiled everything we're learning. And we do have like 3,000 free resources, ebooks, podcasts, white papers, you name it. There's probably something there for you at vanderblumen.com. And it's all there. Just take it, use it, and get better. Because when you, pastor, get better, your church wins, your neighborhood wins, and we get closer and closer to the gates of hell. And I'm ready to storm them down, right? Yes. And, you know, that's kind of where I'd leave things, guys. We are on the winning team, and the enemy would love for you to think this is the worst year ever. Mm-hmm. The enemy would love for you to think that the world is totally out of control and that you don't matter and that people aren't coming back to your church because they don't like you and your attendance levels aren't where they should be because it's all over and it's time to be done. No, you know, we are living in a special time. If the Lord waits to return, and it's 500 years from now, I'm convinced when we're all in heaven, you're going to have a badge that says, I served in 2020. I'm convinced of it. And the alternative to that reality is that we actually are living toward the end of all things. And how cool a time and what an important time to just double down and say, I'm in it to win it. We're on the winning side and we're getting really close to those gates. I can hear them starting to fall. You hang in there, Pastor. You're doing good work. And we're cheering for you.
Wow. William Vanderblumen, the CEO and founder of Vanderblumen Search Group. We thank God for you and all that you are doing for the kingdom. Thank you for coming and being a part of this episode of Church Unfiltered. God bless you.
You too, Anthony. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you for listening to Church Unfiltered with Dr. Anthony Copps. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. For more resources related to today's topic, visit churchunfiltered.com or follow Dr. Anthony Copps on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.